And this is Lena Life. I'm Lena Mirmont, and I have another program with an absolutely delightful guest, very gifted, expressive person in her own rights, who is generously enough sharing with us not only her time today, but her very, very special, timely book, Soul to Soul. We don't have much time sometimes in life to share our soul-to-soul thoughts. So today we will have this wonderful opportunity to do so. And I will invite any Burnside who is going to talk to us about very sensitive issues, extremely subjective and yet very real and extremely helpful to understand in a relationship between ourselves and our children. Annie, welcome. How are you?
Thank you, dear Lena. I'm just honored and thrilled. I know I'm Chicago, you're New York, and I can't wait for a little bit of soul to soul with you today. My absolute favorite thing to do and to be, so I appreciate it so very much.
Wonderful. I like to go right into the tissue of the issue, as I sometimes say to my students. There are many books regarding our challenging times, how much we have to get back almost to our own oneness, to get in touch with our own soul and thoughts. And on the surface, it looks so natural, because who can be closer to ourselves than ourselves? But in real life, indeed, it is not so easy sometimes. So we have many books, we have authors, we have wonderful thinkers. I found you unique in your own rights. And therefore, my first question would be, what really prompted you to write your book? And what was the goal? And do you feel that you did accomplish your goal in your book, Soul to Soul?
You know, wonderful question. You know, the book, it's my first book. I wrote it not as an expert in any way. I mean, how can you be an expert on spirituality, parenting, oneness, all those things that you mentioned? Just it literally poured forth from me before I even knew what a book proposal was, the whole thing. And it's really close to my heart because it's what we do in our own family, soul-to-soul parenting with our own children who are now 14, 13, and 10. You know, I've just been a spiritual journeyman really my whole life, but very consciously since the age of 19. It's my greatest passion other than my family. And the spiritual development path or personal growth path has really, in the past several years, led me to a felt reality deep within where self-love merges with oneness. And it just, it was very clear to me that as a parent, my goodness, we're modern, a family like most listeners probably. We offer our children many things. But in my heart of hearts and in my soul, I realized that if I could offer my children this same connection to their to the voice of their own soul, to their interior, to their inner compass, and a comfortability within their own skin, then I would have really done my best as a parent. So that's really how this all evolved, just as a way for me to share experience and perspective and say, hey, if anything resonates, if you want to pull from it in your own beloved family, use it, add to it, create your own, if it could spark people to perhaps shift focus a little bit on what they do in their family towards more of this interior aspect of life as well as exterior, then I would be thrilled.
I certainly appreciate the way you put your book together. It is very clear, and considering how abstract subject is, and considering how hard to connect feelings to the word, I do admire your very clear vision, because in these three parts, you certainly trying to get all map, and I would say almost all an emotional globe of human issues and human journey. I will suggest perhaps that we will talk about a few chapters, and it's not going to be in a particular order, because I have to confess to you there are certain things which I read For example, in a chapter which has to do with the spiritual signs, and then I moved to family rituals, I still was with the spiritual science. So it is a wonderful book in one sense, because you can open it almost at any chapter, and you will be at home with a certain specific answers, or if not answers, at least questions you are struggling with. So if you do not mind, could we just go to certain points in your book, and if we can do some kind of order, and I like to stop on the part one, where you're talking about to blaze a spiritual path to your own family. So perhaps you can elaborate on this and give us the sense how this individual can merge with a family and vice versa.
Well, absolutely. Well, thank you. I love what you shared about my book. You really nailed it as far as that's exactly what I desire it to be, both practical, both esoteric. You know, it's almost 2012, and for me it's really about every day. Who are you when you're in the grocery store, at your kid's baseball game, when you're on Main Street? It's not so much about heading off to India, which would be absolutely lovely, to a mountaintop to meditate for months. But as you know, the mother of three wonderful children, I'm a wife as well. It just, you know, it's really to me about right now in your own backyard, in your own home. So I liked how you touched on that. And yes, the book is meant to open and use and almost like a spiritual companion, a friend. So that too, I'm thrilled that you touched on that. You know, the path for me, it is such a singular, intimate, personal path, this opening into your own interior. But it became very clear to me one day, several years ago, I woke up to it, the type of thing that it just comes in like a strong intuitive flash, like, oh, dear Annie, take your children with you. Don't wait. Don't savor and save all this wonderfulness that you're taking in and integrating and learning, and the downside of it, the inner excavation that you know goes right along with all the joy, all of it. Be more open about it with your children, with your spouse, Annie. It just came to me like, they don't have to wait until they're 40. They're already there. It's just really a reminder and a permission that this is a safe place to express from the soul and to see and view and feel the soul, that inner space, as something that's just as much a reality as what you can see in the physical reality. So that's really how it came about. It was just like a bubbling over of, oh, yes, I'm going to devise a way to really purposely, consciously share this within my own family. And then the idea to turn it into a book came much the same way about 3 years later on a walk. Wow, this is really something unique occurring in our family, and I want to share it with others. How maybe a book about soul-to-soul parenting. So I my work has always been very organic and grassroots, and I have a feeling that's how yours has been too, and just going with the flow, and there's always plenty of room at the table for anyone interested, and for those not interested, that's more than okay too. I bless you with so much love either way. So I hope that answered your question.
It certainly does, and I like to pick up on one thought which you so honestly express, that it's wonderful if you're interested, and it's okay if you're not interested. I would say it's not possible not to be interested. And we just have all our different compasses in life. We do have some arrogance. We do have some lack of a certain desire to understand certain things, even though we know we need to understand them. So I found that indeed in this chapter and moving into the part two, you, I would say very tactfully, but with a great strength of your conviction, indeed, make your points, and you make this so natural that one who is far away from those issues becoming that much closer by the end of the book. So I like to perhaps elaborate on one thing to get away a little bit from the book itself, because I like to make a little points and talk about you personally. I think you have this wonderful merge of natural components, which indeed created such spontaneous decision to write this book and then produce it. You are certainly professional in your own rights with a degree from DePaul University in Chicago. You have master's degree in sociology. And then you also became a teacher of the fifth grade. And fifth grade to me is a very peculiar because it's not already a child. It's not quite a teenager. It's that exactly borderline when a transition should take a place. And it's extremely critically important time in children's development. And then, of course, you crown your experience with your three children, which you already mentioned, being wife, mother. And then, obviously, almost like a natural conclusion, we have a soul-to-soul experience of your own, and you share this with whoever will be reading your book. So I would say that evolution, which you experience yourself, is somewhat, in a sense, uniquely harmonious because you could connect to professional foundation, to the personal experiences, and then merge this, give it to all of us. So my my next question after introduction of who you are is to your part two book, which specifically address the weekly family discussion. Let's talk about this, because that's the point when family is supposed to come together, not necessarily in agreement, but they are coming together. Tell us about this.
Yes, you know, it, when it became clear, like I said, about 7, 8 years ago, my kids were 4, 7, 8. Okay, how are we going to create a safe family environment? It's not just going to happen just because, of course, I'd whispered all along in my babe's ears, oh, you beautiful soul, we are here to create together, and I am here for you, and I see you as an eternal, infinite being beyond the role of being my child. So I had done all of that quite naturally, but it became clear, okay, what are we going to create in our own home? And the family discussion, to me, it's the first vehicle tip, very important, and that you really decide as a family, you know what, we're going to create the space together, the two of us, the three of us, however many of you there are, and all these different family shapes that we have nowadays. And we're going to set aside some time in our busy life to really converse and share on the deeper levels. And it became clear, wow, this would be the space where we could read a children's picture book and then pull out the theme of self-love or connectedness or oneness and something that's already very natural to them. And even if it was a 5-minute discussion when they're 4 or a longer when they're 14, we have the space and the responsibility as the leaders, quote-unquote, in our family, because we are in the parent role, to really create the opportunity. And so the family discussion for us is much more than a family meeting, and I think a family meeting is wonderful too, but it really has the purpose of helping our children to remember some large universal spiritual themes. And we use music, we use books, we use movies, we're talking every day. I always like to give this example. Lita Wise won the American Idol, a show that we watch together and enjoy, a couple years ago, and he wrote a song called Sweet Serendipity. And I love this song. I listen to it, and it kind of uplifts me, opens up that channel that I love so much, the gateway to the divine. And so, you know, a family discussion was we listened to it. We talked about what a serendipity is, a synchronicity. There's the opening right there in a song that they're hearing on the radio. Listen to the song again quietly, meditatively, and then that's the end of the discussion. So it's not meant to be anything that's added too much to your busy plates, but it just lays the groundwork where you introduce some of these larger things that really they know about deep within. And then if your child gets off the, say we do ours on Sunday, but then if your child gets off the bus on a Tuesday or Wednesday with an issue with a friend, oh boy, you've talked about multiple perspectives. You've talked about oneness. You've talked about forgiveness. you've talked about gratitude as a state of being, as an actual vibration. And so you have some tools to work with. So the family discussion is just kind of that beginning where once a week we're going to say yes to this. And then it just becomes part of who you really are as a family.
I'm so so glad that we spent that much time on this, because it's truly the basic thing. And I just wanted to make a point that doing one little thing, you're accomplishing so many other big things. For example, if family comes together, and in your situation you have three children, in my situation I have one son, but it takes that much further, meaning that if we discuss one thing with the one child, two other are listening. They are part of it in the silence. I believe that with the young children, the learning process in the silence just as powerful as when they are verbal. It is so much more difficult for some children to be silent. There are some very shy children. There are some very private children. They have all this endless vocabulary of self-expression. But when family comes together and you interact with one of the children regarding what discussion is, everyone is participating. In fact, the others who are not involved in that particular moment, they are very free to participate in the way they want to participate. And I like very much your some of your points in this chapter and what you just mentioned on the weekend, because the weekend is a preparation for the week. Every time they go back to the environment where they have a problems, as you mentioned, and certain things you describe in the book very eloquently, they are that much more prepared. So it's not as foreign world for them. It is it's becoming part of their own life. I like to move to another chapter if you actually I'm struggling because the visual cues are so wonderful, and you truly almost like a graphically descriptive on this. Spiritual science, remarkable chapter. But let's talk about conscious breath, because imagination and meditation is incredibly important, but hopefully with a conscious breath, we will touch upon those two. Because when I was reading conscious breath, somehow I still was again with imagination and meditation. So let's talk about conscious breath.
They're very interlinked. And I just have to say, you are a fabulous interviewer. You just, you make me feel so comfortable. And it's just beautiful how you really honor someone's work and voice. I'm really enjoying this. So with that being said, we'll move into conscious breath. Yes, we, from a young age, really taught our children about the powerful pause is another way to put it, that it doesn't have to be a full-blown meditation for 30 minutes sitting, you know, in the Om position, that you can really connect with that inner quiet, still space, even just within a few minutes' time, a few seconds, and to really take the deep breath and then breathe out and connect with your soul and ask for help or just be, and to use that, you know, 7 times a day, 10 times a day. There is no limit. So we really we're helping our children, I hope, and it's all ongoing and simultaneous. You know, I'm doing and being exactly what I'm offering them. We're mirrors for one another. So, but just the realization that they, you know, are accountable for their own life and responsible and powerful, all of those three things. And conscious breath, it's something that I use all the time. And it just takes you right back into the now moment and calms you so that then a choice can be made if it's time for a choice to be made. But always allow yourself the time to be with yourself even for a few seconds. So I the powerful pause, conscious breath, and I'll tie that into visual cues. We have visual cues in our family, and if we've talked about conscious breath, for example, in a family discussion or at any other time, we might just plop that one right up on our kitchen cabinet. I use bright yellow paper and little reminders, visual cues. Take a conscious breath. Remember it soul to soul. And I kind of write in like funky little Annie writing, and I have a laminating machine because I am that fifth grade teacher at heart that you mentioned. I laminate it and cut it out in a funky shape and put it up on our kitchen cabinet or bathroom mirror or bedside table, our glove compartment in our Spirit Mobile minivan. We have Spirit on the license plate, has an ego versus spirit poem. You know, so little things like that, it's kind of quirky, but to me, that's how our family really began to integrate it. Again, so the goal is, gosh, when they're 21, 18, they're well on their way, on their journey of conscious spirit embodiment, just like I'm well on my way on my own journey. It's very ongoing, no finish line. But I think we as parents can really help create the opportunity for self-realization, essentially. That's what we're talking about today.
What a wonderful comment about those little things. I like to stress this because we have to be realistic. Everyone has its own way of scheduling life. Every family has its own ways, habits, challenges. But those little things which are very doable, they will make a foundation and they will make a difference. So I marvel very much how you put little details and augmenting them, making them truly so remarkably important. And it is wonderful that, for example, your children have this language of communication from their young age. So it will be their habit. In fact, they will not know any other ways. And coming back to us adults, I believe that because we are facing with a, I call it certainty of uncertainty, we almost don't have a choice but do come back to ourselves to establish or reestablish this dialogue, to do this meditation, perhaps not in a very strict rules by others, but to find our way with a, such a remarkable help like your book, and do this on a regular basis, almost like a second breath. So yeah. I feel that if anything one can find in this extremely complex and stressful world is a reinforcement and inevitability to come back to ourselves and to speak to ourselves in the most honest terms.
Yes, I love how you put that. And if I might add two things here. One, we do it with a lot of humor, too. I think sometimes people think that the quote-unquote spiritual path would be very serious. Yes, there's death, but oh, boy, the joy that rises up. I mean, I might say, oh, mom's putting another blurb up. Check it out. And they might roll their eyes. I mean, we are not a perfect family. I've got 14-year-old, 13-year-old girls. They share a room. Oh, boy, it's not pretty all the time. Let me tell you, I would never want to give that impression. But we utilize humor and depth simultaneously. And I think that's a wonderful thing. And also what you said, the certainty of uncertainty. You know, I truly believe that this is the missing piece, spelled both ways, P-I-E-C-E-P-E-A-C-E, in our world today. It's not really a religious piece, a political piece, an economic piece. It's this piece that we're talking about today, a remembering of who we really are. I mean, imagine the world if all CEOs were clear mirrors, parents, teachers, plumbers, clear mirrors, a remembering that we are eternal, infinite, spiritual, creative beings. I think our world would change instantly. So that's really why this is my passion. It's much beyond my own beloved family. It's my part in hopefully helping to change the world from the inside out.
Absolutely, no doubt on that. And because you expressed so many profound and yet very transparent thoughts, perhaps it's a time for a little reflection, and we will continue the tradition of my program where we interlude a few musical moments, which will not be that much of a different message, which my very dear talented guest Annie Burnside just expressed, but rather continuation on her spiritual vision and her great desire and devotion to help us all and to open her own journey, generously sharing with us. So a few more musical moments, and then we will be come back to our discussions with Annie Burnside, the author of Soul to Soul. I'm back after this just cascades of thoughts, feelings, whatever one can experience listening to this quite special piece of music written by Julian Lampert. And that helps me actually to make my own little second breath and to reintroduce my very special guest, Annie Burnside, who wrote the book Soul to Soul, so timely, as I mentioned before, and now sharing with us her own thoughts about this book and actually adding certain things to what I had pleasure to find in this book. So I will move along, Annie, with your permission, to a chapter which has a very intriguing name, The Intuitive Gratitude Journal. Let's talk about that.
Yes, first of all, the music was absolutely beautiful. In my office, surrounded by windows, looking at my oak trees, and just what a nice offering to put into your radio show. Much appreciated. The Intuitive Gratitude Journal, and a lot of people have, you know, talked about gratitude journals, which I think are fabulous. And years ago, my wonderful teacher, Sonia Choquette, talked about an intuitive journal, and then I just combined the two. And I have to say, bar none, I share this with all of my clients and people who do my workshops. Boy, when I began several years ago, I call it the voice of my soul, Annie's Intuitive Gratitude Journal, the voice of my soul, and I number each one, and I date each entry. Really, I began writing down just insights, free flow of consciousness. That's where I excavate a lot of my emotions. If I'm out and about at the kids' school and, I don't know, say something occurred and someone made me angry or something, which doesn't happen too often nowadays, but it does happen, then that is where I come home and I navigate and work through, because I know that I was plugged into it because of something inside of me. And of course, I share it with my kids. Boy, I got to do some journaling on that one. Let's see what comes up. Let's see what I can uncover. It's like an exciting place to share. And then I talk about any. So I work through psychic debris. I write synchronicities, things that occur, psychic events. Oh boy, it's a really, really good way to realize what a truly intuitive being each of us is in our own right. It's just amazing. Once you start noticing and acknowledging and being grateful for how your soul is leading you each day, if you allow it, or your spirit, or whatever you want to call it. So it just fascinates me. I keep it to this day. My first book, much of it had been in my intuitive personal journals, my intuitive gratitude journal, and I'm writing a second book, and I've just been through with Flag, my last 14 journals. Oh, it's where the gems are, the gems that come to you when you're on a walk, the gems that come to you when you're folding the laundry, you know, and that's just where I get my, that's where I channel in my information. So thank you for asking me. I really love it. I carry it everywhere. It's just this little treasure of mine.
It's absolutely treasure becomes inseparable from you. And again, coming back to your children, you are sharing with them not only functionality of life, and we are in such an incredibly rushed style of life when we give each other orders, where things need to be completed, where expectation on those mechanical duties is almost automatic. And yet you're introducing this, the most sacred and incredibly natural and most important unavoidable part. It's how you get into point B to point C. Point A, perhaps you already know. And if you're sharing this with your children, they are traveling with you at their own rights. So I believe that the process is such a sacred thing. Actually, even if you're on the wrong path, but you don't feel alone, and you can see that there is my mother or father are there, let me watch how they're handling these problems. This is, I think, the golden answer they can get. Not always can ask questions. Not always can get the answers at time, but being in this process with you as a guide, I think that's the really nearly perfect way of life for the family. I like to bring one name into our discussion. I'm not sure that too many listeners will know who is Eckhart Tolle is. But I think one of your admirers, by the way, you have a tremendous amount of sayings and testimonials from bestsellers, people who absolutely admire in your book. There is one, Daniel and Catherine Brinkley said that, especially that it is breathtaking new view on life issues. And another person, I believe William Gladson, said that Ernie Burnside is the Eckhart Tolle of parenting. I like to spend a few minutes on Eckhart Tolle because, frankly speaking, I did listen to some of his wisdom, and be perfectly honest with you, I was resisting a lot of it in the beginning. I still a little bit resisting, but much, much less. Now I see more of a wisdom to it. It was such a different language of the reality for me, especially when it comes to the emotional reactions. Would you kindly tell me, do you feel close with Eckhart Tolle? And what do you think is most important heart of the concept?
Oh, what a great question. I'm actually, my workshop right now is I'm teaching his book, The Power of Now, in a soul-to-soul circle, 10 Fridays in a row with, there's 17 women in it, plus myself. So this is a perfect question. To me, Eckhart is, And I was just down at Harpo Studios. I happen to live in Chicago, and was blogging when Oprah just interviewed him on her life class, and he was in the studio, as is Oprah. So it's so intuitive that you asked me this question, because he's close to my heart right now. You know, I think that Eckhart just is a great example of he's one of the masters walking the planet, I believe, in his capacity for non-judgment, neutrality, for presence. He's a real beer like I am, so I really relate to that. I mean, I could spend 6 hours in my backyard and being with the oak and feeling the aliveness of the oak tree, dialoguing with the oak tree in my spirit, my body. So I really relate to him in that sense. I love his reminder to all of us to really be more than just do. And to me, the message for the mainstream is if we could all flip that even just a little bit, we might not go completely in the direction of Eckhart Tolle. I mean, I've told what resonates from him, but I'm a 41-year-old, you know, mom living on the north side of Chicago, so of course it looks very differently within my form, within my body, but I honor his teachings. And that's what I really suggest to anyone, you know, gosh, everything to gain and nothing to lose by reading some of the teachers out there that, you know, and you pull what works and you leave the rest. And so that I do love Eckhart Tolle. I think he really, from what I've seen, he really lives what he talks. And I admire that greatly because, boy, oh, boy, as we all know, that's hard to do.
It certainly is. And, you know, he touched upon something which is so sacred regarding our reactions. I was very fascinated by the fact when he used this verb to get a very close touch. He using this word lack of resistance. I'm looking for this verb and I cannot remember at the moment, but it will come back to me. Because I was mentally fighting with his concept, but then he explained how it is much wiser not to resist the outside aggravation, for example, but to let it go and pass through you, and not to surrender. That's the word.
Surrender, yes.
When he was using this, and in the beginning, I became very impatient, and I became a little bit critical. How can you surrender? This is a weakness. This is a lack of self-control. But then he pulled me very quickly out of this destructive thinking, explaining that surrender is not indeed lack of action. It is indeed profound control, which creates this power of handling any kind of aggravation which comes from the outside. And he gives this example when there is a sudden noise, and if you are somewhat vulnerable or not very balanced, that will throw you off very quickly because it's an emotional invasion. And if you, however, are conscious of that noise and you allow this aggravation to pass through you, then you are much, much less aggravated. And I started to test this. And sure enough, I started to get a little bit less of a pain on my nerves when I hear some of the noises. Because indeed, we cannot run away. We have to face the reality. It's a question how to do it. And I think he's opening some emotional and psychological doors, which indeed allow us to get that much more with self-awareness, self-control, not controlling. Controlling is something else. But we have this self-control. And that brings me to your another wonderful three chapters, which I found so beautifully done. It's a prayer books, vision boards, and blessing bowls. Can you talk about this in the connection with what we already talked about?
Yes, yes, and I love what you just said about Tolle and the surrender. And many personal, before I get to that, just there are many examples that all of us could offer. This isn't about it's not because you go down this path that you don't have challenges. We most certainly do. I just had operation 10 days ago on a herniated disc in my back that I'd worked on for 8 months in every direction, and I've missed the entire season in Chicago of walking and biking that literally sustains me and brings me so much joy beyond, and haven't been able to even walk around the block for 8 months. And it's surrender. It's not to say I never broke down crying, you know, this hurts and this, I'm frustrated, but boy, oh boy, you surrender. And if you can't do that, then you drive to a bench and you sit and you enjoy the sun and the birds or whatever that way. But back to what you just said, because it was very, very important. I just had to touch on it. But vision boards, blessing bowls, and prayer boxes, it's yet another means to bring all of this wonderful esoteric talk that you and I seem to love so much and integrate it. How can you make it more practical? So the blessing bowl, we call it a bowl of gratitude, and you can find any old bowl in your house or a beautiful bowl, something that you already have, and keep it in a visible place. This is all about not really hiding who we are, but putting it out there. It's part of who we are. It's in the home. It's seen every day. And you can write notes of gratitude, and then as part of a family discussion, share what was put in the bowl for that month, and then start again. In the vision board, we have two big ones by our back door that we created together, of things, dreams, ideas, poems, pictures, colors, little swatch of fabric, whatever suits you. It's just expressions of who we are. Really, always in the prayer box, the same thing sits on our family altar, and people can write a little note in there. It's, again, really the purpose in all three of those things is creating that inner connection. And that direct divine connection is our birthright, and it is possible for us any time of day, any place on this planet. It doesn't have to come in one location at a certain time once a week. It can come there, or it can come in all other kinds of packaging. So anything that you can do that feels good to bring this into your home in a daily way, I think serves the parents and the children quite well.
Absolutely. I have to admit I made a mistake, but it was somewhat logical mistake because I characterize your book as a three-part book. There are four parts. But the reason I made that honest mistake, because chapter Trust and Faith, chapter 18, just took my breath. This is such a most important foundation in life, and yet it is most hurting right now. People did lose their trust in each other, and faith was somewhat tarnished because of the difficulties we have in a global sense of the world. And sometimes I'm asking myself questions when I teach children, my goodness, what is their vision? What kind of an emotional prism they're looking through the world? And it is so amazing to me because when I'm having these discussions, which can be just as a little thing as a color of the a picture which will express some foliage, or picture which will describe some little crying girl or happy dancing boy, they make their own associations, such open vision. They trust their intuition and they trust what they see. I found that your book, and especially in many chapters, but particularly in this chapter, you're trying, maybe between the line, to explain how to preserve this trust, how to treasure it. And even though it can be challenged, and it can, life certainly very often very far from being pretty, but I like to share with you this particular challenge I think we all have, with our children to preserve their trust. Because if they have that, at least that quality, all other obstacles will be overcome with a less of a pain and less of a loss. Please talk about this.
Yes, I just, my trust, it almost like brings me to tears as you talk about it, as I hear someone else talk about it. It is just, it's just into every inch of my body. And it really all began with this process of connecting to the voice of my own soul, beginning to live more authentically and offering that to my children. We've done a lot of work with their body, for example, where if you break a wrist, it's not just that you broke a wrist. Certainly trust a doctor and go and get it set, but also go underneath it a little bit. You know, where am I not flexible in my own life? And also appreciate the wrist for what it does. Love and trust the wrist. Appreciate that it's, you know, without a wrist, you wouldn't have anything holding your hand up. So we try and take the trust, I think, builds just in a multifaceted way in how you relate to everything that occurs in your life. We've done a lot of work with soul to soul versus role to role. And if you can stay connected, that behind a physical mask and a physical human suit that you see, if you can begin to try and feel that that is a large, beautiful energy being, multidimensional, and that they're simply expressing one lens right now, you know, there's a trust always that you really cannot be harmed. We talk about that with our children a lot. I mean, if you believe that you're eternal and infinite and feel it, not just believe it, no one could actually really ever harm me. It might be perceived that I'm being harmed, but I don't believe that I really ever could be because I'm eternal. And so we've really worked with our children in that too. But beyond just believing it, feeling it, we for 30 days practiced soul to soul versus role to role. Well, when we headed out of the house, we made a big poster and marked it off each day to really integrate it. That when you're working with the cashier at your local grocery store, that's not just a cashier. That is a beautiful soul. That is an aspect of God. And you share the same essence, even if it doesn't appear that you have one thing in common, even if you don't like what they're showing you, can you move past that? Can you feel past that? And that's, for me, where the trust has really, really been born. I hope that helps. It's such a vast topic.
You beautifully overwhelmed me. You put so many thoughts. It deserves another show just for that. And just like to catch a couple of thoughts, but you express just an ocean of wisdom right there. This multifaceted development, and that's how trust is developing. I cannot, I wouldn't put it better than you did, because indeed, these little blocks bringing a huge sense, huge message to the children. And I don't know whether you planned this way or it was your intuitive logic, but the chapter before talks about gratitude and appreciation, and then you write about trust and faith. I think they're so interconnected, because if you know how to be grateful, automatically your ego, I call it negative vitamin, becomes that much under control. We do have an ego. It should be there. It's a part of Mother Nature, but it cannot rule our life. So if we have this broad, open sensation and need to appreciate and to be grateful, to be aware that we are next step in a human development, that there was a huge experience before us, and we feel that much more powerful and that much more deeper. Not only we are not alone, but we are this magnificent individual result of all this development. That gratitude creates a platform for trust and faith. And I so much deeply appreciate that you've been able to interact all these qualities in a, such a natural way, even though they sometimes quite complex in a real life.
Thank you. It's the divine paradox, isn't it? It's complex and it's rather simple. I've grown, peace for me has come, I don't know about you, Lena, but through the years of really resting within the divine paradox. And in fact, it excites me so much. It's everywhere. You know, a term paper for children is exhausting and it's empowering. The grandest one that I love of all is that everything has deep meaning and nothing really matters when you're eternal and infinite. You know, it's just another experience. And it really has enabled me, to going back to Tolle, to feel tremendous non-attachment and neutrality and really, really enjoy being in my human body. You know, and that's where the gratitude, sometimes the gratitude overwhelms me so much that it really drops you to your knees with tears streaming down your face when you really get a glimpse in those beautiful moments that we all have at times to feel our own conscious spirit embodiment. It truly overwhelms. Gratitude is really one of the most powerful vibrations in the universe, I think. So I'm so glad you mentioned that.
Absolutely. Any simply because we are graduating towards the end of our program, I'm so glad that we could have some extra time. I like to not finish this program, but would say that we had chapter one, and with the hope that we will continue our discussion and your sharings, I'd like to ask you to give your website and to give your points how everyone can find you. Of course, I certainly will attach our conversation to my website, which is going to be back to the world, and I hope that you will be able to do with yours. But for now, I'd like for you to tell us where can we find you and where can we get your wonderful book, which
is educational
as well.
Thank you. And first, I'll come back anytime. It's been a mutual joy, and that's what I love about life, that mutually beneficial interaction. So thank you. My website is Annie, A-N-N-I-E, Burnside, B-U-R-N-S-I-D-E.com or soul-to-soulparenting.com, either one. All kinds of family discussion topics, books, picture books, chapter books, music, movies to go along with some of these themes that we talked about today. I think a lot of space for everyone to find something that they might like if you heard something that resonated on the interview show. So thank you. My table is always open to anyone, as I hope yours is too. I'm on Facebook a lot. Friend me there and I'll friend you back. I think we live in a world that's getting smaller and smaller in many ways, and I sure am enjoying it. So thank you, Lena, so, so much.
My absolutely mutual glorious pleasure. And I will conclude with wishing Annie and her creativity tremendously fruitful life. She had fantastic beginning. She already accomplished a lot on her own rights with her family and giving so much to the humanity. I am going to conclude with another piece of music, wishing to all of you as wonderful time as possible after all these challenges from Mother Nature. And I would say until soon. That was Lena Life. I am Lena Mirmont with my another memorable program, for which I'm very thankful to Annie Burnside, the author of Soul to Soul. Please take a look at this book. You can browse, you can read, you can learn, and make your life that much more clearer. Until soon.